Mini episode 379 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 379. FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Kyle Ross are here breaking down Super Bowl 48 for you. We have been building to this throughout the entire season, our second consecutive year of going week by week all the way through the season, culminating in our Super Bowl coverage. Kyle, I know that you had a tremendous championship Sunday where you were at. I had a little gathering here at Casa de Ricky-O, and it was great having my usual championship day Sunday gathering with the fellas. It's more of a pure day for Championship Sunday, as we alluded to then. This is the day we have to share with the casuals, and yes, I would include some of the mouth breathers, I suppose, out there among that, but Super Bowl Sunday is here, and with this matchup, it is going to be completely glorious.
It's only been 2 weeks, Ricky, but it seems like it's been forever since we did one of these shows, hasn't it? Yeah, it's great to be back on the air. You know, who would have guessed it? After all these hours, weeks, and months of incoherent babbling, at least from this end of the phone, that I would actually say something correct once. And that, you know, if you check the tape, you know, a lot of months ago, I believe all the way back in August, or whenever, late August, first week of September, whatever it was, made a prediction. I said the Super Bowl would be Denver versus Seattle. And here we go. And the Super Bowl, Denver versus Seattle. Who would have thought that I would actually be right?
Well, yeah, and there was I remember there was some other babbling fool that said San Francisco over Houston, but I'd rather not try to recall who that was.
Yeah, you almost got there with the one, real close with the one.
Very close.
Then real, yes, and then at the same time real far away with the other, but we won't go into that. That's a different podcast for a different day.
But, one pass to Michael Crabtree away, as it were, huh? One pass away.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot bit more of that. I think Houston, though, is a little bit more than one pass away from getting the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes.
I may have to check the tape on that, though. But as you referenced, you know, the Super Bowl is an entirely different animal than the rest of the season. You know, the commercial thing always wanes with me. I mean, I don't need, you know, I think Budweiser could probably spend its money elsewhere to remind me they're still around, or you know, sometimes, you know, the commercial people hate watching the game with me because I'll start making side references like Pepsi. Are they still making soda? I don't know. I forgot about their brand. But I'm in it for the game. It's a game that,
me too.
You know, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but it's a game that, you know, all year I had these as the top two teams. I actually, going into last year's playoffs, had them as the top two teams, too. I really think that if you go back a full year and a half, these have been the two best teams in the league, not by a huge margin, but this year I've had them 1 and 2. They've traded spots a couple of times. Seattle mostly 1, Denver mostly 2. All year long, they've occupied the top 2 spots, maybe except the first week. I know San Francisco, I started them possibly 1 spot over Denver. But I'm not alone in thinking that this could have been that this was going to be the Super Bowl matchup by any means. You know, I'm not the first guy to say, hey, I called Denver versus Seattle before the year. A lot of people called Denver versus Seattle before the year. I think what's interesting is that for the first time, you know, really, since I can remember, we talked about this the last time we were on the air, we did the conference championship games when we had the four best teams left, or at least the four that were perceived to be the best by the public at large, how this year it's been kind of unusual in that we're used to that upset, that fluky team, the Ravens last year, the Giants teams that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl that really had no business being in those games. You know, Green Bay, the year they won it, just kind of got hot at the end, and then the team the next year that went 15-1 didn't make the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, even there's been losing teams, like Arizona that 1 year made the Super Bowl. It's not always the best teams that get here, but this year it is the two best teams. I think that's the allure of the game. That's why I'm looking forward to it. It's strength on strength with Denver's offense against Seattle's defense. I know we're going to talk about that a lot in the next 40 minutes. So I'm real fired up for this game, and I know you are too.
Oh, absolutely. And again, in our most recent segment that went up, I actually name-checked you positively to our guest, Lex Luger. When we were breaking down the game, he is a celebrity guest analyst for the FDH Lounge, and I said to him, because he'd been on for a pre-playoff analysis, and he and I were both right about Denver and New England. Wake us up when we get to the AFC Championship game. And I said to him, I said, our guy on the show, Kyle Ross, I said, inevitably, I tend to gravitate to the things that are too obvious and they don't happen, and he's right and I'm wrong. I said, this is the one time out of 10, maybe, when Lex, you and I were right and he was wrong, because there is almost always something that sneaks up. I said, go back to the Denver-Baltimore game last year when it looked like Denver and New England were inevitable, and it was the same thing I'd said last year, and that was more typical. I was wrong. It looked too obvious. It didn't happen. This is the strange anomaly this time where it was too obvious, but it did happen.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, going back a couple weeks now to the division round, when I made the infamous conjecture that set Jason Jones, your boy, off so much about the possibility of San Diego beating Denver, a lot of that was because that game kind of fit the profile, the pattern, if you will, of upsets we've seen in recent years. But I think if you also check the tape, going into the playoffs, despite me making that incorrect pick, San Diego did cover, by the way, and through the back door, thank you very much. But if you check the tape, I did say, I recall, a few weeks ago, don't be surprised if home field advantage becomes kind of underrated in these playoffs, in the sense that everyone's kind of now been clued into the recent history of upsets in the NFL playoffs. And when everyone starts getting clued into something, that's when it doesn't happen. I talked about this last time we were on the program, how unusual it was to see the public on both underdogs in a conference championship game, those being New England and San Francisco. I'm usually not a favorite guy. I took both favorites in the championship game. Again, not to pat myself on the back, but maybe I will. And, you know, the two favorites covered in the conference championship game. This game's a little more interesting. Obviously, the line move, we'll talk about that soon, in that who moved the line, what percentage was smart money, what percentage was sharp money. The total is a really interesting discussion to talk about, because there's something very unusual going on there, and I will be giving a bonus play on the total in this program, Ricky, that you can look forward to.
Well, and again, it's one of these things. I have to say, I was 0-2 on the conference championship games as far as the spread goes. I did think Denver would win but not cover. I have to say, what it reminds me of, and again, as somebody who dabbles in all of these different sports here, same place where you can find our show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. That's where I always post playoff things for all of the big four sports in this country. I can go back to last year's Stanley Cup playoffs, and I was pretty much consistent in picking Chicago throughout the playoffs. And then it got to the final, and I had that Boston-Pittsburgh thing in my head, as dominant as the Bruins look. And I was like, okay, I got to go off and I pick a Chicago here. And I flinched and I picked the Bruins, and we all saw what happened. It was close, but we all saw what happened. Mm-hmm, kind of mm-hmm. The same thing, because at the start of the playoffs here, I said Denver and Seattle, same as you. And it got to last week, and I looked at the body of work, and I flinched, Kyle, and I was wrong on both of them.
Yeah, flinching can get you in trouble. And it's interesting, as maybe we kind of move into the game itself here, there's no denying who looked more impressive on conference championship weekend of the two winning teams. It was Denver.
Yes.
There's no denying that. I mean, they really handled New England. I didn't even think that game was close to the final score indicated.
Anticlimactic. Boring.
Yeah, I know.
Boring.
I know. I watched the game, while I was out in Vegas, and I know standing amongst the bettors, a few of us, me in particular, because I always worry way too much. That's why I hate betting favorites. I worry so much about getting backdoored. There were a couple of us there that when New England scored that second touchdown, had a chance to go for two, make it a one-possession game. A few of us were getting a little nervous. But ultimately, Denver dominated that game from bell to bell. They made New England look really, really bad. That run game that was so dominant against the Colts the week prior, completely non-existent against the Broncos. Give the Broncos defense some credit. Obviously, the Seahawks defense grabbed the headlines these last 2 weeks. But the Broncos defense has played very well in their two playoff games. So yeah.
Well, I have to mention, though, in terms of how they looked on Championship Sunday, and I agree with everything that you said there, and I'm going to say something that would probably make FDH senior editor Jason Jones howl. As we have alluded to, he has become a full-throated Bronco hawk since moving to Colorado a couple of years back. But here's the thing, though. Looking better in those games, if we were seeding the teams 1 through 4 going in, New England was the consensus number four because of all the injuries that they've suffered. So it's a lot easier to look good against New England than it is against San Francisco. Just putting it out there in all fairness.
No, and that's a great point. That's an absolutely tremendous point. And to be honest with you, I kind of lost my train of thought there in my last rambling. And I wanted to go there, and I'm really glad you picked up on that. Because
Oh, good. Okay.
My whole point, with the whole point at large, as I bring it back around here, as I get back on my train of thought, is – you know me, I almost bet against the opposite of what I saw the previous week throughout the regular season. You know, if a team kind of, if, you know, the New York Jets play really well 1 week, chances are they're not going to play very well the next week because they're
right.
Like not a consistently good team. Now, Denver's a consistently good team, so it's not that easy here. But, you know, just because Denver looked better than Seattle in the conference championship game does not mean Denver is better than Seattle. If Denver beats Seattle, it's not because, oh, I told you, they really looked a lot better 2 Sundays ago. I don't think that's a very big factor at all. Seattle, as you referenced, beat a much better team. Of the four, you know, New England obviously was – well, they were definitely the fourth best of the four conference finalists, but one could make a case that they were actually the sixth best team in the NFL coming into the playoffs. You know, I think Carolina, New Orleans, New England, you know, flip a coin there between those three.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they all took turns beating each other during the regular season, on very late plays. So those teams were all kind of even, and I thought there was kind of a jump up there to the Denver, Seattle, and San Francisco level. So, yeah, Denver beat the worst team. You know, it should have come as no surprise that their game was a little bit easier. Obviously, Seattle was very close at the end. And we saw the early line move, which I think in large part was an overreaction to what we saw in those conference championship games. If you wanted to talk about that now, I mean, I know
sure.
You were kind of doing backflips about that Seattle opened up as a 1.5-point favorite when the line was first posted for the Super Bowl, and almost immediately that number got steamed to Denver -2.5. Now, if that was a regular season game, that would be alarming. But since it's the Super Bowl and it draws so much action, you have to take that move with a grain of salt. Yes, there were the professional wagers getting down initially on Denver, but they stopped at a certain point, probably when they couldn't even grab the point or 1.5 anymore. It was more of a public move that saw Denver get all the way out to -2, -2.5, and now in some places -3. I'm really interested to see where the line closes. That might tell you a little bit more than, you know, what we've already seen to see if it gets to 3, all the sharps will grab that number with Seattle. All of them will grab 3 because it's such a key number. So I know you had expressed to me in some text, should I be worried about this line move? And my answer was, not really. I'm actually quite happy about it.
Exactly.
Given the way I'm picking the game, which
sure.
Most people I figure should know what it's going to be.
Yeah, and as you and I have talked off air, we're both heading the same way on this one. As it sits now, as this is being recorded, Seattle's presently getting 2 points. Yeah, that confused me, the nature of the line moves. We want to get to, as you said, there, we have a number of prop bets to look at, and then the actual analysis of the game itself. A few quick fun things before we do that. My Pete X Film Ultimate Nerd Stat here. By the way, I always have up, you can check it out, again, same place as the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. Our notes and oddities column, so I'm cannibalizing that for these purposes here, but I want to get your reaction to a couple of these things here. Retread head coaches. That retread is kind of a slur that's used against guys who have had a job more than once. But both teams have retreads in the classic sense here. Seattle's Pete Carroll is actually a three-time offender here on the sidelines. And Fox of Denver, John Fox, had been in Carolina previously. This is the fourth Super Bowl that features two retread head coaches. You have both of the Bill Belichick-Tom Coughlin matchups, and then Dan Reeves against Mike Shanahan, his old team, in Denver previously. So the NFC is 2-1 in all retread matchups in the Super Bowl. So that clearly favors the Seahawks here. Revenge is on Seattle's side. 20 years ago this spring, the first ever number 8 over number 1 upset in the NBA playoffs. It was the Nuggets shocking the Supersonics then. Seattle's been waiting 20 years to get back at the city of Denver for that one. So, you know, once again, advantage Seattle. On a little bit more of a serious note, teams rated as the best offenses and defenses in the league. And we talked about this in our previous segment with Lex Luger, and I made the analogy to Randy Orton that you have Denver and Seattle both lugging around two championship belts right now. This is the first time we've ever seen the leaders in both points and yardage on both sides of the ball facing one another. Previous to that, it's been, oh, here's the two best teams in points, or here's the two best teams in yardage, you know, offense versus defense. But this is the first ever dual one, because Denver and Seattle are the best at both. But in ones where it was either or the best previously, the defense leads it 4-1. So there's four, you know, there's four times that the better defense, or I'll say that the top defense has won against the top offense. The first ever Super Bowl to be held on a February 2nd, for whatever that's worth. And the third AFC West versus NFC West Super Bowl in the previous two battles, San Francisco bested San Diego and Denver. So that favors the NFC West. So all of these trivial things pointing towards Seattle, Kyle Ross, take that for what it's worth.
And, you know, these teams are former division rivals. We're old enough to remember that. Can you believe there's an entire generation that if you said that, would be like, really? Yeah, I mean, Seattle, a former AFC West team. These teams, I actually looked. They've hardly played since those days. I think they've played two times since since the 2002 realignment where Seattle came over to the NFC.
This is the weird thing about this, Kyle. This is so shocking because, again, people don't really tend to remember this. I mean, I was alive, but not at the point where I was watching football or would remember this. But in 76, Tampa Bay and Seattle came into the league at the same time. Seattle actually spent their first year in the NFC West, Tampa Bay in the AFC West, and then they switched conferences the next year. So this is actually the second matchup of teams that had once been in divisions together. Tampa Bay and Oakland spent 1 year in a division with one another in 1976 before the Bucs shuffled off to the NFC. So this is actually the second time it's happened, and it's both involved the class of 76 as far as the expansion teams going back and forth. In the case of Seattle, going full circle, returning to the conference from which they were sprung in 2002. Again, they, as you said, 1977 to 01 in the AFC West. So that's a nice little oddity as well.
Yeah, and you know what story has gotten no run? You know, obviously everyone's talking about Peyton Manning trying to become the first quarterback to win the Super Bowl, two different teams. Kurt Warner was the last to try and fail. Craig Morton was on the list. I could not think of the other one offhand. I didn't put a lot of time into it, and because sure enough, I knew they were going to show it. But Craig Morton was the other one. That's gotten a lot of run. So has the fact that John Fox has now joined a short list of coaches that have taken two teams to the Super Bowl. But you know what has gotten no mention? Pete Carroll trying to join Jimmy Johnson as the only coach to win national championships at both the college and NFL level. Now, I don't know if that's because they took away the USC championship. I don't take away championships. I watch the game. Ashley Simpson butchered that song miserably. Okay? USC won a college national championship, and Pete Carroll was their coach. So I will, if Seattle wins this game, I will put Pete Carroll on that list with Jimmy Johnson.
Kyle, I'm not saying this to ambush you because I'm admitting that I was wrong about this as well, because I missed on a trivia question and I saw online. There's one more head coach who has done both of these things here, and he actually gravy-trained Jimmy Johnson. That's why we don't think of him as being a winner on both levels, but he is. Barry Switzer.
Oh, my God, you're right. Your boy Barry Switzer's on that list, too. Yes.
Yes.
And he
Switzer
did gravy train. No, no, good for pointing out. Okay, well, still, hey, a list of three is pretty elite there. I say Coach Pete deserves a lot more credit than he gets as far as I'm concerned. He was a guy that, you know, was not – I mean, you know, he wasn't terrible. People always make these guys out to be so bad their first go-round.
Right.
He never had a horrible year with either the Patriots or the Jets. They were just mediocre.
Right.
And, you know, people are allowed to improve.
That.
Look at Bill. Yeah, well, look at Bill Belichick. I mean, he wasn't very good with the Browns. He gets a second shot with the Patriots and is now, like, one of the greatest of all time in the profession.
That's a very good point.
You know, I mean, you'll always have your Mike Mularkeys and stuff, guys who, you know, just feel retreaded. You retread the dirty word, like you said at the beginning. And, you know, I mean, the Mike Mularkeys will prove that. But there are guys who just generally, you know, for whatever reason, weren't ready maybe the first time. Maybe it was a terrible situation. And, you know, the second time around, you know, it's a totally different ball of wax. So Coach deserves a lot of credit. Yeah.
No, you're right about that. I'm not a big Pete Carroll guy, but I must admit that, and he will deserve the credit he gets if he wins this. One more tidbit I want to put out there before I ask you about the prop bets, and that being as far as the continuing incestual oddities of the Manning brothers here. Eli Manning won his second Super Bowl in Peyton's home stadium, Peyton trying to win his Super Bowl, his second Super Bowl in Eli's home stadium. Kind of spooky.
Wow.
How about that? Very
interesting right there. Oh.
Yes.
I had not heard that. Yes. Wow. That's very.
Yeah. So there's
by
there's
the way,
that angle
is there anything
as well.
Worse? Is there anything worse than the fact that Eli Manning has two Super Bowls?
Well, there's a guy that won my fantasy football championship twice, and it's probably a bigger joke. But, yeah, no, I hear you.
I mean, everything, because they brought him out a few times in the last 2 weeks. And I'm just like, this guy won two Super Bowls? The Giants? Those are two of the worst Super Bowl champions ever.
Well, one of them was 9-7 and gave up more points in the regular season than they scored. So, yeah, I think that was the second of the two championship teams.
Yeah, those two and the Baltimore team last year. This year's team will be an elite champion. It won't be a fluky one that like we've seen the last couple of years, those two Giants teams and the Ravens last year. You know, those are teams that haven't even made the playoffs like the following.
The Packers were a sixth seed when they did it. I mean, we're bucking a trend here the last couple of years. You got to go back to the last time Peyton Manning was in a Super Bowl. The only one versus one matchup of the last 20 years was Colts versus Saints. So strangely enough, Peyton Manning has been in both of them. One more oddity, by the way, as well. I keep saying I'm done, but there's one more. For all these Seahawks fans traveling to the Super Bowl, they are 0-2 as far as warm weather Super Bowls are in the tiny minority, much less open air, as we're going to get to. The only other Super Bowl they were in was Detroit. So they're the only team that's ever been in two Super Bowls and never had one in a warm weather city. Sorry, Seahawks fans.
at least they get to go to New York and not Detroit this time. They'll look past the weather on this one.
Oh, exactly, exactly. What are some of the top prop bets that have caught your eye, Kyle?
I really like Russell Wilson to have a run for more than 10.5 yards.
Ooh, okay.
And that's like even money. So
really?
All it takes really is one scramble, you know, one picked up blitz, and there you have it. He's going to get it. I looked up, in the regular season, he had a run of at least 11 yards in all but, like, two or three games. So I was kind of shocked the price there. So that was one that jumped out at me right off the bat.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, a non-silly one. I like Russell Wilson to have at least one run of over 10.5 yards. Now, he hasn't had one in either playoff game, which is maybe why it's at even money. But something tells me that just says he's due. Two of the two of the games that he didn't this year were against San Francisco. I think there was only one or two other games all year that he didn't. One of them was maybe the season opener against Carolina and then the season finale against St. Louis, I think.
Okay.
When I was examining the prop bet, I was looking at this, and it was too damn, but I think those were the games that he didn't do it. So I think he's due. I think Denver's got an inconsistent rush defense, too, as well as they've played the last 2 weeks. You know, I think Wilson can get out of the pocket once and run for a first down.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things, too, with a mobile quarterback. You see this an awful lot, is you get back in the pocket, you go like you're ready to pass. Sometimes it's a designed thing, sometimes it's not. But as soon as a quarterback sets up the pass, he freezes the defense. You have to play to respect the pass at that point in time. And that's where, if it's a designed play, you'll see the quarterback pull it down immediately. If it's not a designed play, but he's facing a potential coverage sack, if he stands there that much longer, that's when you'll see it. But when a defense commits to defending the pass, that's where your shifty mobile quarterback pulls down the ball, almost invariably gets a first down. I agree with that one. I am flabbergasted at that price.
Yeah, let me just double check to make sure that is even. I really thought it was even money here. Let me take a look here. Where's the Russell Wilson?
Yeah, that is.
Maybe talk about what if you really. I always like those cross sport ones, by the way. Too. You like who? Like what will be higher? What will be higher? Number of Alex Ovechkin goals on Sunday or Peyton Manning TD passes? I always enjoy that.
Well, it won't be Kobe Bryant points this year. So
do is right. Yep, it is. Well, it's not quite even money. It's 115. It's minus 115 for both.
Of course,
it's actually minus 115 both ways. So they're just trying to. The book's a little thirsty for that juice. So
Sucking up the juice.
Give me over 10.5. Yeah. So. Did you have one that jumped out at you?
I haven't seen anything yet that was really caught my eye. I can almost never decipher as far as, you know, like first point score or any of that kind of stuff. It always seems to be somebody that you're really not going to expect, along those lines. I mean, is it going to end up being somebody like Jacob Tammy or somebody like that just to screw with all the people out there? Or anybody that bet the field is going to be screaming, oh, I got that at 50-1 at their Super Bowl party.
Yeah, you know, you have that. Field goal is always a good bet for the first score, I feel.
Particularly in a game
MVP?
Like this. Yeah.
Yeah. How about Super
I'll say,
Bowl
I'll say
MVP?
I don't even know what the price is, but I'll say Hauschka for that
okay.
one.
I'll look that up in a second. Super Bowl MVP. Peyton Manning is obviously the overwhelming favorite, 6-5. But
okay.
If you like Seattle, your top options would be Russell Wilson at 15-4 odds. That breaks down to roughly a little bit under 4-1. Marshawn Lynch at 9-2. That breaks down a little over 4-1. I don't like that as a pick, actually, at all. Marshawn Lynch would not be my choice. Percy Harvin's actually third, which is interesting, at 20-1. Do you think he can make that big of an impact? So I could see him having a really big play in this game, but I don't see him dominating the game, given how injured he's been all year. Now, Richard Sherman's going to be a popular bet at 25-1, but if you're looking for a long shot in the secondary, take Earl Thomas at 40-1.
Ooh.
Because they don't throw at Sherman that much. They only Kaepernick only threw at him twice. Now Peyton Manning remains to be seen. He's not Colin Kaepernick, but Richard Sherman tends to not get that much action. So unless if he were to say get a pick six, and Earl Thomas would obviously need any defender that's going to win the MVP would need a pick six. But I think Earl Thomas at 40-1 odds is a much better value than Richard Sherman at 25-1, because I would actually give them equal to opportunity, even though Sherman obviously has been in the media a lot more. Earl Thomas is just as big a part of what that secondary does.
The only thing that makes me think it's unlikely that Earl Thomas would win is that he's not going into his free agent. This is not his free agent year, because if he were to win the MVP, it would be obligatory for the Oakland Raiders to sign him to an obnoxious contract in the offseason.
That's a
good point there as far as the guys. Out of the ones you mentioned, and again, this is going to tip my hand on the pick, I'm liking Hustle Like Russell as my value for the Super Bowl pick. that MVP. Not a huge value at that price, but like you said, I mean, the fact that he's more or less even with Marshawn Lynch on there, and between the two, I would like him much better as far as his odds.
Yeah, I would like, just because I think the media might be afraid after what's happened in the last week to give it to Marshawn Lynch. And would he refuse it? Because that means he would have to talk all the time.
Yeah, well, it would be great to see him just drop it like it's a microphone and walk off the platform. That would be kind of funny. You know
something tells me that you do not hold Deion Sanders in the highest journalistic regard. And
I do not.
And really no one does. Other than Mrs. Sanders, something tells me that very few do. But I enjoyed that interview that Deion Sanders had with Marshawn Lynch. I watched it live, I was working, and I, like, look up. I'm like, is this really happening? And I'm ashamed to admit this. I've watched it, like, six times. And it gets better every time. From the fact that Lynch curses right off the bat at him.
Right.
And starts, like, checking out what he's wearing. And then, like, I'm just about that action boss was one of, like, the greatest answers to an honest question I've ever heard. Because it literally, like, what does that even mean?
I saw that you mentioned that on Facebook. I saw that. And I had no context for it because I hadn't seen it. And
okay.
I was like, was he getting asked about women? What's going on here? Like, I had no idea what the context was.
No, that was the guy he replaced in Buffalo, Willis McGahee. You know, and he had something much different to say. He had something much different to say.
Yes, he did. Well, any other big prop bets before we go full circle here to look at the meat and potatoes of the game?
I always like to, and I don't have the exact odds in front of me right now, but I always like to take a flyer on these two because you can get them plus money. Will there be a defensive or special teams touchdown scored in the game? I have never gotten more excited during a Super Bowl than when Green Bay scored a defensive touchdown to cash this prop for me against Pittsburgh a few years ago. I went, like, insane because it came in. It came in at a pretty juicy price, I remember. So I was pretty excited. And then you always want – there's a lot of these. You can bet which quarter is going to be the highest scoring or which half. You always want to go late. Even if you look
right at
this year in the NFL, it seems that all the scoring – it kind of happens late. The defense, like, even the great defenses start, you know, tightening up and stuff. So always bet the second half to be more high scoring than the first, and then the fourth quarter to be the highest scoring quarter. Check those out.
Well, the NFC Championship game really kind of points that out. You look at how that went, it really kind of loosened up a little bit. That's a classic point here. And the two defenses, as great as they are, we're allowing more scoring here. And that was one of the things we talked about again in our previous segment with Lex Luger and breaking down the game here. The defenses of San Francisco and Seattle, San Francisco's one very, very, very similar to the one that took them to the Super Bowl last year. They've got almost all the same personnel. But you got to go back prior to that. It's very, very interesting. We're not used to seeing great defenses in the Super Bowl in recent years. As much as I loathe them, I'd say the 05 Steelers, probably the next best one, going back to, again, the famous ones that everybody talks about, not least of which because the teams won without great quarterbacks, the 02 Ravens, or, I'm sorry, the 2000 Ravens and the 02 Bucks. So you've got to go back pretty much, Kyle. If you want to find a defense as good as this Seattle one, I would say that you've got to go back to the time when Tantric was writing the songs that electrified a nation to find a defense this great in the Super Bowl.
Wow. People say popular music's in the doldrums now.
I thought you'd like that.
Wow. Wow. There was a lot.
You're going to need a second to get your thoughts together.
I thought music was kind of good from 2000 to 2002. What were you listening to? Tantric. I can't remember what their popular song was. That name rings a bell.
Breakdown. Breakdown was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a weird, yeah, that's right. The guy was kind of like, sounded like an Eddie Vedder knockoff, right? Didn't he?
Kind of, yeah.
Like
a growling
kind of a
thing. Yes, exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, I remember that now. Yes.
Tantric.
Tantric.
But again, is Seattle's defense the best since those two teams there in the Super Bowl? Again, this pass defense is historic, and, you know, by all of the metrics there as far as what they've done. this defense, and again, and we joke about Jason Jones, our FDH senior editor, like, oh, Denver's offense is historic. Oh, Seattle's defense is pretty good, too. But again, I'm saying it's the best defense in a Super Bowl since the 02 Bucks.
Here's the thing, okay? I think you can make a better case for Denver's offense being the best of all time as opposed to Seattle's defense being the best of all time.
Yeah,
secondary is in the discussion for being the best secondary of all time, single season.
Exactly.
In this era, when you're holding teams 172 yards passing per game like Seattle did, I mean, that's just damn near impossible. And, I was kind of proud of myself when I had Jason Jones. I think he put his jaw on the floor when I dropped that turnover stat that they turn teams over on roughly 20% of their drives, which is unbelievable. I mean, number two was not even close. So, look, but my point is this. Seattle is in the discussion among the top defenses of all time. Denver's offense, same thing. So when you have that, like I said, it's strength on strength and it's a wash. It's not going to be like, whoever wins this game, it's not going to be like, oh, Denver's offense was crap, overrated. Seattle's defense was crap, overrated. It's going to come down to things like turnovers, third down conversions, a play here, a play there. I don't see either of those units, quote-unquote, sucking on Sunday.
No. And Kyle, and I agree with everything that you said there. Again, Denver's offense, top tier, a little closer to the front of the tier. Seattle's defense, top tier all time, a little further behind on the top tier. But they're both top tier units all time. The one thing, this is another good point that Lex Luger made in our previous segment here, and I love this point that he made because I see this. I made the comparison when he said it also. You see it in hockey. You see it sometimes in basketball. It's for elite functioning units, it's all about rhythm. Denver is so much in the rhythm and the timing of this passing offense here. You look at when San Diego beat them in their second matchup of the season, what did they do? They controlled the clock. They got Peyton Manning out of rhythm. I'm not saying that's what Seattle's going to be able to do necessarily, but you combine what might be the elements in the game Sunday, howling winds here. Peyton Manning is predicated on getting in rhythm. He can beat anybody on the planet when he is. Seattle's all about taking you out of it. And that's where I say, between the two, advantage Seattle.
Yeah, and the other thing that's going to be annoying, and I know Seattle fans are hoping that maybe it's their time to get some calls after, that last Super Bowl. I know there's been a lot of sour grapes from that Steelers-Seahawks Super Bowl. But, granted, I was sort of inebriated. I didn't remember that game being as horribly officiated as everyone says. Maybe I may need to go back and watch it again.
It was bad.
Okay. But you hate to say this, but I think officiating could play a role here based on, that rhythm and timing you spoke of with the Denver offense and how Seattle, they like to play a little dirty on defense. They're going to put hands on you.
Granted.
They're going to toe the line. So if the officials let them play, quote unquote, advantage Seattle. If they're flag happy, the Seahawks are in trouble.
That's true. But the way that Seattle plays, it's on the thought of, and not to be too cynical, but again, if they can't call everything. They play very, very aggressive. They're willing to risk the flags more than some other teams are, and that does an awful lot to stir the philosophy there of how they are successful. One of the things we talked about with Lex also, too, and I really want to get your thoughts on this, games like this, I'm always fascinated when you have two elite units. I think a lot of times in the game, it comes down to the winning team has the third best unit. Who do you think has a chance to be the third best unit in this game, the Seattle offense or the Denver defense?
I think it's going to be the Seattle offense. And obviously I'm tipping my hand to my pen. I mean, that has a lot to do with the fact, I guess the chicken, the egg argument, I obviously like Seattle, so I'm going to say the Seattle offense. I think special teams be a wash. But, with Harvin back and hopefully playing a full game, it'll only be a second full game if he makes it all the way through, people underrate Russell Wilson's ability to get the ball down the field. You saw him make a couple big plays against San Francisco. The Broncos defense has some real injuries that you know, are going to be tough to sustain. I know it's just one game, but, I mean, it's for all the marbles. Seattle, obviously, they've got the two suspensions in their secondary. They haven't skipped a beat. Denver's got the injury to Chris Harris. That's going to matter. You know, Von Miller's obviously not there. That matters. So I think it's going to be the Seattle offense, you know, that comes up bigger when, you know, the two elite units are not on the field.
I would agree with that. And I think, again, good old Pot Roast stepped up in the game, a folk hero for Denver, stuffing the run in the AFC Championship game. But as hot as LeGarrette Blount was, it's one thing to
He's
do with LeGarrette Blount. It's another thing to do with, yeah, to Marshawn Lynch. But what's very, very interesting in terms of a couple of the numbers, I mentioned this to you off air, and again, we have to take Denver's with a huge grain of salt because they have many more injuries on defense. Both teams, 101.6 yards per game given up on the ground. Identical numbers there, but again, that's more indicative of where Seattle is right now than Denver. Some other things as well, and again, I found this to be very interesting, that Denver actually outrushed their opponents this year by a pretty wide margin, 1873 to 1626. So as associated as they are with the passing game, it shows that they're able to get it done there as well. So,
well, remember one thing with that, Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky, remember with one thing that also is kind of a byproduct that they're always winning. You know, teams have
yes.
to, their opponents more often than not have to abandon the run.
That's a great point. That's an excellent point. And Sean Marino is able to get, and I've been a big Marino guy for a long time and felt that he would be a good running back even when he wasn't getting the opportunities. But again, how do you load up against the run with this Denver offense? He is the beneficiary of that somewhat. So again, still I say advantage to Seattle in the rushing game over Denver, certainly. But yeah, that's an interesting thing as well when you look at what Lynch is able to do against, or I'm sorry, what Moreno's able to do against a defense that can't respect the run that much. I agree with you as far as Seattle being the better unit there, that their offense will probably be the third best unit on the field Sunday. Does it bother you at all, the recent, I don't want to say struggles of Russell Wilson, but that offense hasn't quite looked itself over the last 6 weeks or so. Is the league catching up to the fact that they don't even try to stretch the field, or is this just kind of a bump in the road?
I want to say bump in the road because, you know, I think they do stretch the field at times. I mean, when Wilson has to, they, you know, he's completed the big pass. He had the big touchdown against San Francisco. He had another big gain early in that game. He had a big gain, I believe, against New Orleans. Now, you don't see it with the frequency maybe you do with some of the other offenses. But, you know, again, Seattle, compared to the rest of the league, plays kind of an unusual style where they're willing to rely on their defense to just shut the other team down. Now, you know, Seattle's offense can't play as poorly as it did against New Orleans or San Francisco and probably win this game. You know, they're going to need more. But, you know, I think the Broncos' defense will be the weakest of the three they faced so far.
I think they absolutely will be. And, yeah, I was referring more to frequency on that, but you're right. They are relatively high percentage for when they do try to go downfield. So that is an interesting point as well. One more in their favor. In our very limited time remaining, time to make our picks here for the game. We've both kind of tipped our hand on this to this point. Seattle's getting two. I say they don't even need it. 19-17, maybe a late Stephen Hauschka field goal to get it done, but I'm saying Russell Wilson for MVP. It's going to be the Seattle defense that sets the tone here, not the Denver offense. This will be the first time all year they're held under 20. You heard it here first.
Wow, I think it's going to be higher scoring than that. But at the same time, I've had Seattle 1 and Denver 2 for the most part of the year. Seattle's the better team, and they're getting points. I'm taking Seattle. Before the year, I said it would be Seattle beating Denver. And to be honest with you, that plays a large role in where I'm going with this pick. I've been on Seattle since halfway through last year. No need to abandon ship now. You talked about a little bit earlier the trouble you can get when you do that. So Seattle wins the game. And I also like the over in this game, Rick Moore.
Ooh.
Maybe a bit of a surprise.
Okay.
I like the over. Non-conference games this year, 48-15-1 over. Denver went over all four of its games against the NFC. Seattle went over three of its four against the AFC. I think the weather has been completely overblown. And this total, you know, for a Denver game is pretty low. I know I'm taking the team that's got the better defense, which would make you think I'm going under, but I don't think they're going to hold Denver under 20 points. And so if both of these teams hit their offensive par, it will go over.
It's going to be very, very blustery, but it may not be a big snowstorm on Sunday. Can't let it go without saying this again, as the game is going to be on Fox. Yes, Buck and Aikman on the booth. You've got Aaron Andrews on the sidelines, and the lovely and delicious Pam Oliver working one of the sidelines as well. That's obligatory for me to work in there if we're going to be talking about a game from the Fox A crew. Kyle, a pleasure as always breaking it down with you, my friend, and look forward to our season recaps shortly to come. I'm looking ahead to next year, division by division.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.